Sein Sakko ist hässlich.
Ja, ich weiß.
Er labert gern Müll.
Kanzlerdiktatorin.
He looks like the cute grandpa in a Werther's candy commercial. But in fact, he's the creepy neighbor who doesn't want black people living next door. That's according to one of the many German satires about the elderly, tweed-wearing leader of the AfD, Alexander Gauland. Rhymes with Final Countdown, sort of.
Alexander Gauland.
But are Germany's right-wing populists attacked in the media more than other parties? How effective is satire anyway? And now that the AfD is in Germany's national parliament for the first time, what sort of a party is it becoming? I'm Damian McGuinness, and those are some of the questions we're tackling on today's Stammtisch. My regular co-host is DW's chief political editor, Michaela Küffner. Michaela, there are quite a few, let's call them unusual characters in the AfD. Do you think they just make good targets for satire?
Well, they certainly livened up the scene after the Grand Coalition was playing a very calm board of chess.
That's true. Everyone said it was very dull before. It's not dull now, is it?
It definitely isn't. The AfD gives everybody a lot to talk about, and they actually relish the opportunity to make the headlines both on satire but also in the newspapers, for instance.
Okay. Bojan Panchevsky is Berlin correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Bojan, do you think the AfD gets attacked more in the German media than other political parties do?
I think it definitely does, and probably for a good reason as well, because as you've kind of explained earlier, they're extremely controversial. They have this kind of policy of creating headlines, of creating splashes in the tabloid newspapers, and that, you know, they get a lot of traction in the media, and of course they get a lot of criticism. You know, sometimes they're just whinging. Of course, they have to face the criticism, but sometimes one gets the feeling that they are being judged more harshly because they, you know, because of their positions, and because I think also simply because they are quite new. You know, it's a kind of a anti-establishment protest movement slash party, you know, sort of a controlled chaos type of political project.
And so, they're certainly shaking things up, aren't they?
No, absolutely. I mean, as Michaela said, I think the Bundestag has become a real sort of place for lively democracy.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a lot more detail in a minute. Linda Vierecker is political reporter for DW. Linda, where do you stand? Is the media being unfair to the AfD?
I think they're not being unfair. They're looking at the things that they're saying. They're reacting. Sometimes they're really playing everything that the AfD says. I mean, if you look at, you know, at your Facebook feed or so, you're seeing what Alice Weidel said. You're seeing what Gauland said. You see it in every detail. You don't even have to follow the debates. And I see it a bit different than you do.
So you don't quite agree with Bojan on
and
this?
Not really, because I also think, you know, many things have been said that it might be that they are really saying what many people think. But if it comes to an extent where it's like racist and it's in the Bundestag, I mean, where's the line? That's what I'm asking.
Okay, well, let's look at the background then of the AfD. Michaela, can you please give me a quick potted summary of the AfD's history?
Well, the so-called Alternative for Germany was founded in 2013, and really it was an anti-Euro party that ideally wanted the German Deutschmark back.
And yeah, because it was at the height of the Eurozone crisis, wasn't it, at the time?
Exactly, and they didn't want to see any kind of bailout. They certainly didn't want to see any kind of taxpayers' money being pledged, and they wanted the good old days back of the Deutschmark.
And they were set up by some professors, I seem to remember.
Yes,
it was an academic
in Hamburg. And for about 2 years, there was a fight going on within the party whether a conservative, business-oriented group would really get a foothold in this party. Then there was a split.
So now it's anti-migrant, anti-refugee.
Yes, and it was almost dead, actually. It was really losing in the polls just before the migration crisis, what became known as the migration crisis, hit in Germany in 2015.
That's right. So we had the Eurozone crisis. It was doing really well as an anti-Euro party. The Eurozone crisis faded away. Things got better in Greece. Germans were less worried about their taxpayers' money.
And then the AfD was fading with the end of that crisis.
Right.
Then came the migration issue, and the AfD from day one really went in the opposition against Angela Merkel's policy. They will admit behind closed doors that really that's what saved them, this migration crisis. That saved them from going into political oblivion. And now, of course, they entered the German parliament for the very first time, and they are in almost all regional parliaments in Germany.
How well placed are they then in the national parliament right now?
Well, they now are with 12.6% after the Social Democrats decided to once again go into a so-called Grand Coalition with Angela Merkel's party. They are the largest largest opposition group in Germany, which is quite a rise to political power from pretty much nowhere, and which also gives them the first right of reply in the German parliament.
They've got almost 100 seats in parliament now, haven't they?
Yes, and they have declared for themselves... On the night of the election victory, Alexander Gauland said, "Wir werden sie jagen," we will hunt them. And really what he meant was Angela Merkel and her CDU party.
So as we've said, the AfD has morphed over the years. I'd like to define what sort of a party it is today then, because descriptions really vary according to your own political viewpoint. Linda, how would you define the AfD?
I think it is a party that is still looking how to define itself.
And, yeah, it's still a bit in flux, isn't it?
Definitely. But I think is definitely a right-wing wing there, a strong one. And the question for me is, how strong is it? And that depends a lot of other things, you know.
And so when you say right-wing, do you mean right-wing extremist or nationalist or populist?
There's probably all of it. I do think that there's also right-wing extremists, and looking especially at how they see Germany's past and how they want to define it.
Well, there are some individuals who have actual previous convictions as well.
Or neo-Nazi activities.
Yes.
And these are members, or are they MPs?
They're members. You also have MPs.
But they also have a large part of just very conservative people. I would say, you know, many people I spoke to from the ground, they want a Germany back that isn't changing so much. They want Germany back how it was in the 90s. Kind of stable, conservative, not so much diversity, not so many refugees, not so many migrants.
So it's lots of issues bound up together with migration, but it's not just about migration.
It's not just about migration. I think it's about being against change.
I think that the whole issue of migration really is the defining issue right now. The AfD has recognized that, and that's the one thing that unites people within that party who really are a mixed bag of protest voters, both from the right and from the left. That's what we did see actually in the past elections.
Linda, you looked like you weren't agreeing there when Michael was saying it's migration that unites all the different parts of this party.
I think that is the topic that is successful. Yeah, I mean, if you say something about migration, this brings you the people together in a sense. But I think
a big chunk of the electorate is susceptible to that message, that anti-migrant message.
Yes, and pointing out things nobody else wanted to point out. I mean, it started a little bit with the euro crisis, but the same thing with the refugees, you know, like, yeah, everything is fine, but it's not, you know. They're pointing out things that all the other parties are accepting, and that's something I think many people being critical about the system or so, the people on the ground, they might not be right-wing extremist, but they accept this part of the AfD. This is not what the AfD is about. They wouldn't call themselves a far-right party. They would say they're conservative, yeah.
But they like having this far-right element in the party in order to shake
things up. They're accepting it. They're kind of like, they see that it brings them attention. And they're not, you know, they wouldn't argue against it. But many of them wouldn't argue for it either.
I'm observing a contradiction in how the AfD labels itself, because at the same time... AfD leaders complain that they are reduced to this issue of migration. And at the same time, if you follow debates in the Bundestag, you will find that very often it will take about 4 minutes to get to the issue of migration, no matter what they're talking about.
But I think they fit in the mold of this kind of populist groups that are mushrooming across Europe. A good part of the party belongs within the democratic spectrum, because, you know, being a nationalist politician is not a bad thing per se, even if you disagree with it. It should be there for the voters who find sort of, you know, who seek that sort of politics. But there is a good part of them which is outside of the democratic spectrum, and these are the people who have very, very controversial views, who are probably on the far right, who have spoken out, you know, against Jews, you know. I mean, there are, you know, obviously the neo-Nazi links are documented, anti-Semitic outbursts are documented. So I think...
So it's a very broad church, isn't it?
It's a very broad church. I think it includes people who are sort of neoliberals, libertarians in the economic sense. Then you've got actual nationalists, sort of patriotic nationalists, conservative politicians. Then you've got outright sort of people who are suspected to be, you know, neo-Nazi in their thinking. So it is a very broad church, and I think it's typical for these new protest parties. UKIP was like that as well. You know, they rally around the cause, migration, in most cases. And then a lot of them are opportunistic. I mean, you speak to a lot of AfD politicians who don't really believe these slogans, but they have to go with it because they see there is success in that. I mean, they're reaching 15% in the polls.
So defining the AfD is also something that voters often find tricky. Our very own Max Koschik has been chatting to German voters and asking them how they describe the AfD.
Provocative.
Dangerous, very dangerous.
And how do you find their political engagement in the Bundestag so far?
I think it's embarrassing, but it's good that they have opportunity to show the world how silly they are.
Yeah, I think they also act very provocative in the Bundestag.
Also im Großen und Ganzen hat sie viele Ansichtssachen, was ich jetzt nicht unbedingt so gut finde. Aber sie können alle ziemlich gut reden. Das ist, glaube ich, ein ziemlich positiver Punkt.
So you think they're very good speakers, but you don't like what they're talking about?
Yes.
Puh, radikal.
In my opinion, the AfD is one of the most racistic parties in Germany.
Now, we quite like random music on this show, as you know, and I actually thought that it'd be tricky with this topic. But in fact, when you go online, there is no shortage of AfD musical material. It's quite a niche genre developing out there. Yeah, it's quite impressive. So I've been browsing through top AfD songs online and come up with a few examples, which I'm going to play you guys, because I think they say something about the AfD and the attitudes of voters towards the party and how the AfD is seen in Germany in general. So, first track.
Bist du alleinerziehend und willst nicht, dass der Staat dich unterstützt, dann wähl die AfD. Willst du eine Steuerpolitik, die nur dem Großverdiener nützt, dann wähl die AfD.
Michaela.
It's from Jennifer Rostock, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. It was released in the run-up to last year's parliamentary elections, viewed almost 10 million times, that song. It was an anti-AfD song. Tell me what she's singing about.
Basically, her argument is if you want establishment, if you want privileges just for very few people, then vote for the AfD. So it's pretty much exactly the opposite from what the AfD claims it stands for. But I think the fact that we're reverting to pop songs to explain policy is almost an argument in itself.
A lot of voters lower down the socioeconomic scale have voted for the AfD.
A lot of people who live in fear of slipping down on the social scale.
But I would argue, I think, that the main driver for AfD voters is a cultural one, a sort of socio-cultural one. And I think, you know, I've visited many of their strongholds, for notably the island of Usedom in eastern Germany, where I think almost 40% or you know, they had a really high turnout and people voted AfD in droves. And what people there complained about was that they have been sort of abandoned by the mainstream parties because some of them voted both Social Democrat and Conservative, and in the course of the years, because their demographics are in decline, like in most people, most places in Germany, you know, hospitals started shutting down, services started shutting down, the court moved to Schwerin, I think, so they have to drive 180 kilometers or whatever. There's no pediatrician in the whole area, so they have to drive really far, people who have children, to take them to the doctors.
But then that all begs the question, why vote for a party which is talking about lower taxes, fewer services,
exactly,
potentially?
Exactly. I did put the question to them, and then they say, well, we've tried everything else, you know, yeah. And on top of everything...
Well, the voters say that. The voters say no one else is doing anything.
And these are not, right, I think, neo-Nazis. These are really nice people, you know, the people I've spoken to. And basically, their main argument was, we've been told for 20 years or over 20 years that there are no means, they have to pull the services out of this community. Schäuble was saying that we have to worship the Schwarze Null, i.e. the balanced budget. We can't spend, we're
an old
country.
So that's been the finance minister of the past few parliamentary
sessions. Exactly, and then 2015-16, the refugee crisis happens, and then all of a sudden there is an enormous amount of funds released, you know, to tackle this issue. And people read in the newspapers about 20 billion a year, about 80 billion in 4 years or whatever. And they're like, where is this money coming from? I mean, Schäuble told us there was no money for our, you know, hospital here. And now all of a sudden we've got 20 billion a year for people from, you know, for foreigners, essentially.
And you can find that with many topics, actually. I mean, looking at the people in the East, especially, they have no mutual affiliation to the as we call them, established parties. Yeah. You know, there was, I mean, the SPD and the CDU, they're all, in a way, they're new to them.
So
yeah?
That's the center-left, center-right, the two main parties,
exactly,
which are West German parties.
The West German parties, yeah. I mean, So, you know, there's nothing like, oh, my father always voted for the SPD, my mother always voted for the CDU. There's nothing like that.
In the former communist
East Germany. In the former communist areas, in the five states that are former Eastern, and the area you were talking about as well. So, you know.
So you're saying that the AfD finds it easy to pick away those voters because they don't have the deep-seated affiliations historically with the traditional parties.
You would vote for the SPD 1 year, then CDU, you would try out the left maybe again, and then,
so
you know,
you
nothing
center
works.
Center left, center right, far left.
Nothing works, and then you'd go to the AfD.
Okay, next track. Tell me about this, what it tells us about the AfD.
Von Flensburg bis nach München, von Aachen nach Berlin. Da fragen sich die Menschen, wo führt das alles hin?
Okay, what do you think about that? You're singing along there, hit with Linda.
Yeah. It's actually the Tab 2, 3, 4 that you have on this, you know, those family meetings where you everybody's dancing. That's the kind of like the beat I'm hearing within my
like
family.
The Dorf Disco, the village
Dorf disco.
Disco.
Marius Müller-Westernhagen style, right. Yeah, like this.
So it go down well in a village deep in Eastern Germany.
I probably see that, or anywhere. Probably
the village
also,
festival.
Not in Bavaria, but in the other parts of Germany, it probably works as well. But it's an AfD spot.
Exactly, so commercial for the AfD.
Yeah.
In the run-up to the last parliamentary elections.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very positive beat. Yeah, that's the marketing there. And it's very critical. I mean, that's the lines I'm getting there towards everything that is doing the Angela Merkel. And she's letting in just the migrants and not solving all problems.
Do you think it would go down well with certain voters in rural electorates?
Yeah, not only in rural, but especially there,
Bojan.
Well, I've not seen it before, but yeah, it's a catchy tune. I mean, obviously, politically loaded lyrics. Yeah, I can see this going down well. It's kind of sort of funny a little bit, so there's a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a satire at first. I was looking for AfD satire that's done across this, and I was waiting for the gag, and then I realized it's actually very serious.
I can see. I mean, they address
the
issues.
Would it win over
that,
voters?
Well, I don't know. I doubt it will win over voters, but it certainly will kind of galvanize people, I imagine, because it does, you know, it speaks to the issues that they are worried about.
I think there's a huge market for these things to share among each other within Facebook groups or so, you know.
Right.
So, you know, look at this new track, and then it's just, you know, it's something within the group that serves the need, to reassure themselves also that, this is what I think. Yeah.
But the AfD's social media strategy was pretty effective, wasn't it, in the run-up to the last parliamentary elections?
I was just looking at Björn Höcke, how many Facebook fans he has, and I think it's like...
I think it's typical for these new populist movements to have a pretty good social media strategy, because they are kind of disruptors, they are not afraid of being controversial or downright insulting or horrible, whatever. They have fewer filters than established parties. So I think that's part of their success. They come across as genuine, and they do really get huge amount of traction on Facebook and Twitter and stuff, because, you know, every time there is a terror attack, you will see an AfD politician immediately talking about Muslims and Islam, although we don't even know what's happened. You know, it's like a sort of a, you know, knee-jerk reaction that is quite appreciated by people who share their views, I think. Same thing happened with the attack. There was a terror attack in Münster. It turned out it was a mentally kind of ill German national, ethnic German. But, before that was announced, I think there were AfD figures speculating this was an Islamic attack. And, it doesn't matter if later it gets denied or not. I mean, they have their impact.
But all these comments or videos are very spreadable and shareable, aren't they, social media?
Yeah. Social media is very conducive to, populist politics, I think.
Let's have a listen to our final track. Tell me about this one.
Sagt mal, wo kommt ihr denn her?
Von rechts außen, bitte sehr.
Ihr schürt Angst mit Flüchtlingszahlen.
Juso gewinnt man Wahlen.
Habt ihr an Fakten kein Interesse?
Halt die Fresse, Lügenpresse.
So, tell me about that one.
Yeah, I've seen it. I confess that's my... kind of humor. I'm enjoying actually a lot the satirical way.
You laughed
way.
When you watched
I
it.
Laughed. Yeah. I laughed when I was watching it. And I was only surprised about one thing. They called him Björn Höcke. And there's a movement in the satirical formats we have that they call him Bernd Höcke. Even
just
when they see him in an interview, they call him Bernd Höcke.
As if they can't remember his name.
As if it's, you know, it's
who
it's
are you again?
Just like something that's coming up all the time. So yeah. I don't know if he loves about it. I doubt it, but
I think they called him Björn Höcke because obviously Björn von der AfD is like
born in the USA.
Born in the USA, yeah. Kind of.
Oh, okay, yeah, in this one, yeah, in this one,
sort of more or less, yeah.
I think it's quite funny. I mean, it's I've not heard it before, but you know, I mean, it's he's a good figure to you know, he's a great target for that sort of satire.
Because he's one of the most controversial, prominent figures in the AfD. Isn't
I think he stands for the worst in the AfD in the public kind of domain, and
because he was the one who came out with that very controversial comment about the Holocaust Memorial being a monument to shame.
Yeah, there's a string of controversial comments he's made, but I think also there is a suspicion he's been writing these kind of far-right articles under a pseudonym and so on. And it's also quite interesting that they can't get rid of him because there was an attempt to eject him. And I think one of the reasons why Frauke Petri, the earlier the leader, the more sort of from this perspective now more moderate leader of the AfD, she herself got kicked out because she failed to, you know, she confronted him and lost. He's got good support in the grassroots. So that's quite interesting that, you know, the grassroots of the AfD are supportive of a figure like that.
So as you say, Linda, there's a big culture now in Germany of satirizing the AfD. And this is public TV, isn't it? This is publicly funded television as well. So how effective is that? And how legitimate is it to actually use?
Speak to the converted, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
that's exactly.
If you have sympathies, or if you're worried about the issues they talk about, Höcke talks about, if you have this issue of national pride, you know, migration, whatever. I mean, I don't think this will convert you, you know, to vote Angela Merkel or the Greens. I kind of don't think so.
I definitely agree. If I follow some people on my timeline that I know that are AfD voters, yeah, I see what they're sharing. I mean, I could post that to them, or I could post that and that would be just nothing. It was just, you know, and they're sharing other things. It's like two different worlds. I mean, Cedric is exactly. Very, I think it's great for the people right now to work in this because you have so much
there's lots of material, isn't there?
But it's the same with Trump, yeah? I mean, this it gives us material, but it doesn't change anything. Is it legitimate? Yeah, it is. I mean, you have to stand that. You have to survive that in a way. And I think they're doing it in a way. I mean, even with Björn Höcke, there's a cultural center that actually put the Holocaust Memorial in front of his house in where he lives, yeah. So they rebuild the memorial there in a smaller version, yeah. And I mean, they're trying to go against it, yeah.
Which was in reference to the remarks he made about the Holocaust Memorial.
Exactly, yeah.
I think a court found that was legitimate kind of artistic expression and so on. I mean, I think there is a bit of a danger of a backlash because I think if you sympathize, maybe you're not an AfD supporter, but you have sympathy for the stuff they do speak about things that actually worry people. It's not like they invent issues. These issues are here and among us. And I think there is a slight danger that people will think, well, you know, I distrust the media because they attack them all the time and they are the only ones who openly talk about what I'm worried about. So I think that is a bit of a danger if you push it too far in kind of trying to ostracize them in the media and everywhere.
And can it seem patronizing for publicly funded TV to do lots of satires about the AfD? Can it play into the AfD's narrative of victimhood?
I think so too, yeah, definitely. I mean, this is that they're going against the public funded media. It's one of the things that they're saying, you know, we should change the system. Because
they want to get rid of the license fee, don't they, which funds public broadcasters in Germany.
Exactly. And so, you know, this is definitely something that could play in their hands. But I have to say, on the other hand, I mean, if you look at how the left wing Social Democrats are being attacked by the satirical formats as well, or the CDU or Angela Merkel, I'd say it's fair enough, it's balanced enough. I mean, all the parties get their share in a way.
Okay. Okay, well, let's have a look at the impact of the AfD right now in Germany. As we said last September, the party entered the national parliament for the first time, now has almost 100 seats. And since the government coalition formed a few months ago, after a lot of coalition wrangling, Parliament has, for the last few months, got down to business, finally. So it seems like a good moment to take a look at the AfD right now and assess what they're up to. So what's been their impact on the Bundestag so far?
Well, definitely we have more discussions now.
It's livelier.
It's very lively. Yeah. I did turn it into the discussions a couple of times, and I must say I enjoyed it, but I also see a fear in it that, you know, really some things that are being said there that are being shared after that in the Bundestag, like Alice Weidel's quote about young women with headscarves being basically like she's put it in the same category as criminals. Yeah, so it's just something that is... it's not appropriate for a Bundestag. That's what I would
say. OK, well, let's have a listen to that clip Linda. You're quite right, because earlier this week, the German parliament had its first general debate of this parliamentary session, which, as usual, was about the budget. And as is tradition in Germany, the leader of the largest opposition party, which is the AfD, and one of the leaders is Alice Weidel, as you say, Linda. She spoke first. She caused quite a commotion. Let's have a listen to a few words from that speech.
Burkas, Kopftuchmädchen und alimentierte Messermänner und sonstige Taugenichtse werden unseren Wohlstand, das Wirtschaftswachstum und vor allem...
Alice Weidel said, burkas, girls in headscarves, knife-wielding men on government benefits and other good-for-nothing people are not going to ensure our prosperity, our economic growth and our social welfare system. AfD members stand up and clap and jeer uproariously. The rest of the parliament either stays sitting stony-faced or boos at Alice Weidel's comments. And then later, at the end of her speech, Alice Weidel is reprimanded by the parliament's president, Wolfgang Schäuble.
Diskriminieren Sie alle Frauen, die ein Kopftuch tragen. Dafür rufe ich Sie zur Ordnung.
I think that's a typical AfD speech. I think that it really hit the mark. It achieved exactly what they wanted to achieve, because they got on the front page of the Bild-Zeitung.
They're
all over the media.
It's sort of saying on Bild-Zeitung, that's Germany's biggest tabloid paper, biggest selling paper, in fact, this is how much the refugee crisis cost us so far. So, yeah, they're driving the debate aren't they?
I mean, yeah, exactly. They mix issues which are relevant. You know, I mean, the costs of this, the integration. There are huge issues with integration in Germany. I think we've discussed this on other podcasts. And, of course, they capitalize on all these issues by you know, using this very harsh rhetoric and putting women or girls who wear headscarves in the same category as knife-wielding sort of criminals and whatever. So, obviously, you know, discriminatory remark. And I think what this achieves is also is lowering the bar of the debate a little bit, because this...
it makes the debate coarser.
Yeah, absolutely. Raw, coarse, you know, sort of forceful.
Alice Weidel also called the government idiots in the speech.
She did. That's
role,
how she concluded.
I guess. It's still... I mean, there's such a danger to it. A good discussion is great, but, you know, there's racism.
Insults.
There's insults, yeah? Mm-hmm. And... this is really, for me, something they have to draw a line. I mean, but of course, what happens in the media, it's exactly this quote that is everywhere. Yeah. And I mean, somebody has written it. Yeah. I mean, somebody must have looked over it. So it's exactly what they want. So we're playing it. We're playing it. Yeah. And that's what's worrying me as well. And this quote is everywhere. And I mean, what about this woman with a headscarves who are hearing it? I mean, how do they feel? Do we think about it? I mean, we're discussing it, but for me, this is a topic, yeah.
So the media is playing into the AfD's hands.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of... yeah, that's the challenge of reporting populism. But I think that's what we've had with President Trump in America. You know, the media are often accused of reporting every word he says and all the controversial remarks. But on the other hand, what can they do? Not report it, you know, that. But I think everywhere in the West, the bar has dropped severely in the past few years. I mean, things that weren't imaginable before are being said quite easily and routinely.
So do other political parties know how to deal with the AfD? Because it's changed, hasn't it? Because we've seen various different reactions. Green Party leaders have stood up and called them racist in Parliament. Other times, Merkel did not react at all to that particular speech from Weidel.
Yeah, she ignored it.
So we've seen both strategies, ignore them or or react to them?
I think you cannot ignore them, really, because they're there.
Well, that leads to my next question, my final question, really, for you. I want you to predict whether the AFD will do better over the next 4 years and get more votes in the next election, whether they will end up with fewer MPs, or will they get chucked out of the National Parliament altogether? Give me your predictions.
I think it's quite difficult to predict, but I think definitely they will not be kicked out of Parliament. I think they're not a flash in the pan. I think their main issue, migration, will continue to kind of plague German politics, and they will capitalize on that because they can shout from the gallery. They don't have to do anything about it. They don't really have any responsibility. So it's easy to be critical, I think, and then they will certainly profit from that comfortable position.
You think they'll end up with more MPs?
I suspect they will, actually, because if you look at the polling, it has improved since they entered Parliament.
Slightly, yeah. What are they now, 14% or something?
Well, depending on the polls, but they reach 15% in some polls. So all the extreme rhetoric, the scandals, it didn't hurt them. If anything, it helped them a little bit.
I think they won't disappear. I think there's, no matter what they do, there will be about like at least 8, 9, 10% that will be straight voting for them just because.
So they're here to stay in the Bundestag.
They're here to stay. The question is, I think it'll depend on the other parties if they get their stuff together and change a bit also. Yeah, give other solutions and show that they are better in, you know, solving the problems. And if they can do that, I think the AFD will rather get less percentage at the next election, because I think, yes, some people are now realizing what the AFD is, also seeing the debates, yeah, but I mean, many people also, they're not afraid of this, so they're here to stay.
To end, rather than use music, I think we should finish with one of the best politically incorrect satire sketches ever made about Germany. Any guesses?
I think it's this video where this from Jan Böhmermann.
I quite like that one. We like Jan Böhmermann on this podcast.
Okay.
Good comedian there. Mm-hmm. No, this is actually a very old satire sketch, British.
Oh, okay.
Classic TV.
Is it Fawlty Towers?
It is Fawlty Towers. Mm. Well done, Boyan. Which sketch? Which bit of Fawlty Towers would you...
Oh, God. So I suppose don't mention the war.
Exactly. Don't mention the war from Fawlty Towers.
I think it's a German tourist coming to this family-run hotel in England, and then because the owner is kind of worried that his prejudice might come to the fore, so he wants to welcome them, and in the end everything goes wrong. prejudice come to life, and he kind of a goose steps and does the Hitler salute and all sorts of things.
Says a lot about British attitudes towards Germany. So I'll hand over to Basil now, but that's all for this week. Thanks to Max Koschik for producing. And join us next week for the latest political chat from Germany.
Listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right. So, it's all forgotten now and let's hear no more about it. So that's 2 egg mayonnaise, a prawn Goebbels, a Hermann Göring and 4 colded salads. Oh, wait a minute, I got a bit confused here. Sorry, I got a bit confused because everyone keeps mentioning the war. So could you... What's the matter?
It's all right.
Is there something wrong?
Will you stop talking about the war?
Me? You started it?
We did not start it.
Yes, you did. You invaded Poland.